Everybody, this is Dario with AfterBuzz TV. Did you know that TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever? Yes, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Now, some features are not available in all states, but that's okay. In the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off of their MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what people pay for the car you're looking for. Then register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. The third step is so simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, everyday TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Save your time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another AfterBuzz TV after show for Downton Abbey. This is series season 5, episode 7. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Tamara Berg.
Hey everybody. Alina and Courtney couldn't be with us tonight,
not be
so
with
you're going to get a big old dose of John and Tamara tonight.
All right, you know, sometimes I come up with these little silly, quippy little things about what happened in this episode.
Do you have one?
No, because I just want to start right in with Larry and Tim.
There
the
are
bright
things
prats
to
that they are. if that's an okay term. I'm not even sure how bad that term is.
You're not
is.
Sure in, if you're in, swearing or no, not in
no,
British.
No, exactly. I'm not exactly sure. But I just, when this particular scene happened at the dinner table, I was just oh man. I mean, that was, I can't not talk about it right up front because I just want to get into those guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, we opened
of Isabel's storyline, she finally announces
thank you,
that
yeah.
Lord Merton is she's engaged and they're going to be wed.
So, and Lord Merton, are you sure?
Are you sure?
Are
yeah.
You
so
sure?
The big announcement finally comes. We've been waiting a couple of weeks for it.
Yes.
And as you know, we're all happy. So it looks like everything's going to be grand, you know, because what else goes on? Mary says, you know, you should have a dinner here to celebrate. Isabel can meet your sons. It looks
right.
Like, oh, sure, why not? It'll bring the families together.
Yes.
Setting up this whole wonderful thing. And of course, it can't go that well. Because, yeah, go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. A wedding is supposed to be a joyous event. It's one of those things that, generally speaking, you know, they make videos about engagements.
Yeah, but like all weddings, you got crazy family
right,
members.
Right, fraught so, with family
exactly,
things.
Exactly, so you got all those things going in.
Right.
Oh, speaking of which, before we get into the whole dinner, let's also talk about Violet, because
this was a big part of this particular
storyline.
Yeah.
Because when they announce it, of course, Mary looks over at Violet and she sees the Dowager has
a bit crestfallen.
Yeah, a little, you know, she doesn't seem to be so happy about it. And of course, Mary wants to talk to her about it. And she makes the mistake. She misreads that look from Violet that she's jealous because their positions are changing. She's not going to outrank her.
Right.
And of course, when we finally get to learn, we've been, you know, postulating this for a couple weeks now as well. What is she really doing? You know, because she's the on again, off again about whether or not she's helping to get them together or keep them apart. And it turns out the Dowager really is just sad that she's losing a companion.
Yeah.
And how much did that hit you emotionally?
Well, there was so much sadness in the entire storyline.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
First of all, Violet is sad.
Yeah.
About losing her companion.
And I think it really surprised her that she felt that way, don't you?
Yeah, well, she said, Mary said something like, I've never known you to be sentimental.
Yeah,
and she
dewy-eyed.
Said something to the effect of, I've never been sentimental.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of those things maybe that happens with older age. Mm-hmm. But also, the idea that Mary thought that of her grandmother and her grandmother felt slighted by that.
Yeah.
You know, that Violet said, really, that's what you think of me?
Yeah, that was also.
And saying, you know, I've sort of how did she put it? I've mistook your confidence, or I've regretted, you know, taking you into my confidence, which was just sad. But her, you know, her saying, I've gotten used to having a companion or a friend, and I will miss that. I shall miss that.
Very heartwarming, because it was, you know, it's nice to see her little, her staunch roughness be kind of softened a little bit by, of all people, Isabel, because they weren't the, you know, warmest of friends, and they haven't been.
No,
but there's something about that, the fact that they're the same age, and they understand, you know, what it is to have children and grandchildren, all that kind of stuff. That it's
and
all
loss.
There. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
They've been through a lot together with Violet being sick and. You know, the loss of Matthew and so much going on within their families. You can absolutely relate to the idea of Violet being sad of losing her friend. Right. But, you know, there has to be some of that on Isabel's.
Yeah, you would imagine, because they have begrudgingly created this bond between them, and they did seem like true friends, especially in the last few episodes. They really played that up, you know, playing cards and asking about the prince and the princess and all that kind of stuff. So they really played that up, which is great to see. So, yeah, we don't know how Isabel feels about it specifically, because they didn't have a conversation about that, but we certainly could feel it from Violet's point of view, and that was a good side of her to see. And at that moment, I felt really bad for her, because that seems like a lonely existence. Her existence is with Denker and Spratt, which is not going well.
Frickin' Spratt.
So, and all his histrionics. And
right. Well, but at the moment that that Isabel announced, you know, there was this great joy around the table.
The
everyone's
and,
so happy. Let's toast. And Violet the Dowager, you know, sort of kind of, eventually gets up and holds up her glass and is, you know, doing her best to put on a brave face and really be happy. So the dinner, everyone's concerned about Larry.
Yeah, because they're afraid, you know, because of what happened last time when he put something in Tom's drink and made him appear more drunk than he was.
Right, and his father said, "How
dare you? Yes,
And it was a great moment,
wasn't it?
I mean, threw down the napkin and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. So Larry says, you know, he starts to, what did I say, mouthing off.
Well, they start talking about other things, you know, and they basically did a great pivot, you know, a political pivot where you're talking about one thing and they just pivot to what they want to talk about, which is the impropriety or improper marriages between people who obviously aren't going to do well together.
Right, exactly. And how obvious it's going to be that they will divorce.
Right.
You know, and everyone's just sort of chit-chatting in the proper way that, you know,
that you do at dinner.
British aristocracy does. You know, he's talking about the wide disparity in background and class, and that may be your undoing. Mm-hmm. Lord Grantham, what did you say?
Yeah.
And so he kind of checks him on that. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, to give him the room to backpedal.
Right,
or
right.
Exactly. But he doesn't. He doubles down and decides to jump right in headlong.
Right. And is it his father again who says, "How dare you?"
I don't remember who said that.
Or it was Lord Merton. Well, I mean, Lord Grantham, rather.
But everybody else was in shock except for Larry and Tim. It seems to have decided pre-dinner, they'd come up with a game plan, or at least what it looked like.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, and Larry says, you already boasted, you know, talking about the dubious choices in spouses that this family makes, essentially.
Yeah.
And he says, you already boast a chauffeur, now you can claim a Jew? That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
That is it.
Yeah.
That's it. And, but, okay, so Tom is the one who calls him on it.
Right, exactly.
Don't you think that was weird?
Well, yeah, because I expected, because of the way Lord Merton had said something the last time so quickly when he found out what was going on, I thought for sure he was going to come to Isabel's defense right away.
Yes.
And it didn't happen. Then I went, wow, that's strange that happened. And then I always thought, because of the way they were doing the whole thing between Violet and Isabel, I thought Violet would be the one to say something, which I was going, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, it would have.
Especially to hear her put them in their place. But it didn't. But Tom did it. So, but in a way, it certainly echoed the last time they were together when they were yelling at each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, and somebody had to say something. Everybody else was being too damn polite about the whole thing. And
and you know, not out of character for Tom to say something, but out of character that he would be the one who finally spoke up.
Exactly. Because
you would think that the patriarchs of all the other families would come up before him.
Because it seems so out of I don't know what's the right term.
Which is just incredibly uncalled for.
Well, it was rude. It was insolent, all those things and everything. But I was going, wow, this seems out of proportion. I get that, you know, okay, so they don't want their mother replaced or whatever. But to do it there
Come
in
on,
that way in front of everybody.
Like, and it's not like they're 15 years old. I mean, I know. Seriously.
It's like, what do they have to worry about? And I understand that they're saying their position. But their position is secure because they're the sons of this guy. They're going to inherit everything. She's not.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's just BS.
Yeah, but it was
classist.
Yeah, but it would seem, you know, the other thing is, and I know that we've already experienced him as not being a very gentlemanly gentleman. So that was no surprise.
But the killer was Tim, the
younger son.
What did you imagine, that we would welcome you with open arms?
Just that she's already flayed, yeah. And you want to stick another knife in her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just, wow.
So the moment that killed me about that was dinner's over. Larry's been kicked out. Yeah. They're waiting in the car. Dad, come on.
Yeah, I know. Larry's been saying, are you kidding? You didn't make them walk home? I mean, you were still going to drive them
exactly.
home?
Exactly. Wow. And so Lord Merton and Isabel come out, as we'll talk about later, the other incident is happening with Rose on the side. And so Isabel is standing there. Lord Merton says, I hope that you won't hold this against us or change your mind. And she says, I just can't talk about this. And I can't talk about it now. And I can't talk about it for some time.
Right.
And she's very kind to him.
Mm-hmm.
Where she, you know, I think kindness is sort of the, you
well,
know, basis of who
from.
She is. Rose walks by very happily.
Of course.
She forces a smile somehow. But the look on her face as she stands there in the moment, you know, not the small moment at dinner, but the moment of, I think my whole life is changing right now. It's like my reality was here, but really it's here. And her entire perspective has shifted.
Yeah.
And the look on her face was so heartbreaking. I couldn't stop crying at the end of this episode. I really couldn't.
I know. Well, it was reminiscent of I was speaking last week after Violet left the Drews and she'd realized that the baby's gone and all that other stuff. That look there. That's what I love about the show sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes they just let the minute hold and you just get to see it and let the actor play the moment.
Right. And that's one of the things that we were talking about with this season, especially in the beginning, the series. Mm-hmm. There was so much frenetic activity going on. We
they
weren't getting to live in those moments,
right.
And that's one of the things that so many of us have always loved about Downton Abbey.
Because they're devastating.
Exactly.
Devastating.
And so she's standing there, and her perspective has shifted, and she's heartbroken.
Yeah. And what?
I couldn't stop crying.
I know. And you think about it, and I go, what was going through her mind? What does this mean? Because what I hear is this man who's wooed me. She used the term wooed me.
Yes, she did.
And I'm happier for it. And so she thinks her life is going off in this direction, and then to have to deal with these two knuckleheads, they're assholes, but afterwards. Because how are you going to enjoy your life? I mean, I'm guessing if she decides to marry him, she will, because they're not really going to be part of their day-to-day life.
No, but they could certainly make her life uncomfortable.
Yeah, they could. And this is what really ticked me off, is why didn't Lord Merton say something more sooner? And really, really come to her defense and champion her and stuff like that. And I just went, what are you crazy? I mean, I know they're his sons, but he even makes the claim. He's trying to, you know, grasp at straws by saying they take after their mother, all that kind of stuff. I'm going, why didn't you just stand up?
Yeah.
Stop it.
I don't know, other than Julian Fellowes is trifling with us again allowing there to be an opportunity for...
But his feeble, the last time you were here, I had to apologize for behavior. Please don't make me do it. I'm getting awfully tiresome. I'm going...
Yeah, really? That's way too many words.
No throwing down the napkin. No going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, nothing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was shocked. And, you know, maybe it's just so that we can have that moment with Isabel. That's all I'm thinking. Yeah.
Well, and even Isabel, at that moment, you talked about kindness. The moment prior to her making that, the look on her face that you were talking about after Rose leaves. But she tells Lord Merton, don't blame Larry. He hates to have his mother replaced. She's still trying
She's
to find the
good in him. She's apologizing for him.
She's still trying
exactly.
to find the good in him. Even though he was just horrible to her. Rude, insolent, the vitriol, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Wrong.
Still trying to. Okay. Because that was so difficult. I wanted to get that one out of the way because I wanted to, on the flip side of engagements, we have Rose and Atticus.
Let's talk about engagements. Yeah, this one,
a much different engagement. Not an announcement, but certainly an engagement because, and, you know, and this is kind of fun because, you know, Rose for so long has just been, you know, well, you know, sneaking away at night and going to jazz clubs and getting caught and, you know, having somewhat of an affair with the jazz.
Jack Ross,
thank you. And then, you know, she, of course, she finds Atticus, you know, while she's doing her noble work with the Russian refugees.
Right. John and I had dinner together before this, and so there was a lot of rapid conversation between us. But one of the things that you were talking about was how Rose has sort of assumed the Sybil.
The Sybil, The ingenue, you know, the young love thing. Sybil was in a hospital doing her duty.
Being a nurse.
Here Rose is doing her duty with the Russian refugees. So there's this, you know, again, a nice parallel going on here.
And it's,
so
you know, kind of beautiful young love. Yeah, it's very romantic. It is.
Yeah, and you can, you know, obviously Sybil was with a chauffeur. Rose is with a Jew. So they're going to have some challenges and stuff like that. Which I actually liked the way that this was going because, you know, we first open up the episode by meeting the Lord and Lady Cindy, and you know, get to know who's on what side of the equation in terms of whether or not they're wanting this particular
whether or not
nuptial event,
the union will be smooth.
So of course, mom is okay with it. Dad, not so much.
Yep.
And we get to learn a little bit about them, which is nice. And we even had that nice moment walking up the stairs with Lord Grantham and Rose and talking about, you know,
this is a big decision.
It's a big decision. You know, it's best not to pretend that this is going to be plain sailing.
Right.
So, you know, obviously bring your mom into this, you know, because there's so much of, of today, this particular episode was, should we tell him? Should we tell him? We tell him? No, let's keep him out.
Yes.
You know? So, and he's trying to say, look, bring your mom into this because it's not going to go well if you don't.
Right.
So.
And if you'll remember, Lady Grantham's father is Jewish, and so, and one of our viewers pointed that out on YouTube.
When she said that at dinner.
So. Yeah. No, but last week.
Oh, beg your pardon.
In between the two episodes. So, so, you know, this is sort of territory that has been, you know, gone through by the family before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they know that there's a little bit of challenge. And Lord Swindoby, he does not look like a pleasant guy who's going to go easily into that arrangement.
I'm sure his family's had a tough life. And, you know, he's just beginning his position, you know, and they're worried about, and it's tenuous at best and everything like that. So he, I'm sure he wants things to go smoothly. And if not just for that, but for his son.
Well, and think about it. I mean, if he is this sort of pillar of the community, of the Jewish community, and that's how he's establishing himself, then
His son marry out of it.
Exactly. Is the community going to move against him?
Yeah,
and I'm sure that's a very important consideration for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, well, you know, the nice is they don't pretend that it's not going to be challenging.
Yeah.
They're not.
But mom thinks she's charming. Yeah. And she is. And let's just face it. In the coming ups, we saw a wedding cake being built
a wedding
in the background.
Cake.
So there's going to be a wedding.
So, And but is it going to be theirs? Or is it going to be Lord Merton and Violet?
Oh, please don't be ridiculous.
It's going to be the young one.
It's the young love.
The young
love. Yes.
It was kind of fun to watch, though. You know, they were great. Giddy as all.
Oh, the moment where, it was just cute and sweet and just what, you know, young love engagement should be.
I'm going, you've known each other for what, how many weeks now?
Yeah, weeks
or whatever, and you've seen each other five times?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's been a few more that we haven't been
privy
to.
Yeah, but they're both super cute.
Sure, why not?
You know.
Yeah, but they're so gung-ho. Everything, but they know for sure.
So. Yeah, well, and he said, you know, look, here's the deal. We know we're gonna get married.
Anyway.
Let's just head through it.
But I was also thinking, look, because all this other stuff that's happening right now, especially with the Isabel thing, you got to do something to break up the pain of all this stuff. So
there
was nice to have that moment of, just
joy.
Positivity, joy.
No, I was really happy about that.
You needed it.
Honestly. I did. Yeah. I was so upset about Isabel. But yes.
Well, all right. So let's get to the other engagement that is now no longer an engagement.
Oh, good Lord.
We finally got that taken care of. And weren't you wondering why did this take so long? Really? Because it seemed like after it all happened, of course, I'm talking about Mary and Tony. You know, that whole thing. Because Tony, at the outset of this particular episode, says, you know, she still wants me. And even if she didn't, I can't.
When he's walking with
When he's walking
with
Blake. Mabel and Blake.
And Mabel.
And he says to Blake that, you know, it would be dishonorable for me to let her go. And he doesn't explain why, but Blake, you know, says, look, like, I don't know. So,
right.
But then Blake says, okay, I'm not getting anywhere with Tony. I've got to go to Mary. So, look, just give him a clear message.
Right.
And Mary, you know, in her mind, she goes, I did. I've told him.
I can't be more clear than I don't want to marry you. Please leave me. But apparently that's not quite enough.
Is it just because they slept together? And Tony goes, well, she's only saying that. But, you know, since we slept together, then therefore, because he even says to her that whole thing about, you know, a lady like you wouldn't have slept with me if you didn't know. So he's really believing that?
Yes, but I think that's ridiculous. I mean, how can I possibly relate? Well, because they're in a completely different time. Yeah. But yes, that's in theory his argument.
Right. But okay, so Mabel and Charles come up with a plan.
Right.
They get Mary to come up to London to the
cinema.
So that he can plant the kiss on her just for Tony to see. And I'm going, and then that whole sequence there right outside the door, it's like, what? You know, and Tony's going, all right, I get it.
You didn't need to give me the tableau. Yeah. Apparently you did.
Yeah, because he said if I'd known me leaving you would have been allowable, I would have done it. And I'm going, what are you talking about? And that whole sequence of everybody's realizing what's going on and talking about it, but not really talking about it, Mabel saying, let's go to dinner.
I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You're right. So his line was, if you would have told me I was allowed to walk away, I would have. I mean, that was the direct quote. Yeah, that was what he said.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I felt like, okay, this is what we talked about at dinner. I felt like this is a little bit of a, you know, sitcom storyline.
Uh-huh.
You know, quick, come out here and kiss me. Oh, kiss me. You know, I mean, it just seemed, a bit silly.
Uh-huh.
You know, where the show has been very serious.
Uh-huh.
You know, a serious drama with little light moments here and there. And, you know, let's go to the cinema and kiss cinema. Me. Oh, cinema. Sorry. Cinema. I don't know.
Whatever he said.
I don't speak British or Italian. So there. But yeah, you know, come out, kiss me. And then, you know, the walk by happens. Yeah. And it was just, I mean, it was just, I'm really a little.
It was clearly staged. Tony saw it was clearly staged. But the whole conversation after was, really, that's all it took? I mean, you couldn't just listen to her and say she was not she had no interest in you, and Charles telling you, look, it's done, it's not over.
Well, and I guess Gillingham, I mean, Blake was saying, you know, you let him go and then you pull him back,
mm-hmm.
you know, was a little bit of his argument. I just felt like it was silly.
Yeah, it was.
We're going to get to this because we don't have the other two ladies to give their brilliant input. Yeah. John and I are going to just rant for a little bit here. I'm just telling you. I'm warning you now.
Well, I think I know what Courtney would say.
I do too. Yeah. I know. We're going to speak for both of them, or at least for Courtney. So,
but that just cracked me up because it seemed like a whole storyline. Then it just stopped.
That's why I'm saying it felt like a sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's how you resolve it? That's it? That was just seemed silly. And then I kept thinking, well, you know, I'll start the subject now, the topic now, because it has to do with this.
It
felt like, you know, the last series, we ended with Gillingham and Blake talking about.
Thank you.
Let the battle commence. And there's been no battle, really.
No.
There's been nothing in terms of a battle.
There hasn't been.
There's been no real love triangle.
There's a little bit of, you know, silly drawing room humor going on, but certainly no battle.
And I was like, you know, why did you set all that up if you didn't really deliver on it? And then, you know, why not deliver on it? Because it's so rich with great drama.
You know, again, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, how much we love the courting between Mary and Matthew.
Sure.
And it was, you know, on again, off again. And we got to see her ambivalence about, you know, mm-hmm. should I or shouldn't I with him?
Right.
And, you know, we could kind of see both sides of the story and really understand her argument of this is a big decision. And then, mm-hmm. you know, and then, Lavinia dying and how tragic that was, and that it brought them together. And by the time they did come together, we were just so happy mm-hmm. because it just really felt right. And Matthew had always loved her all along and always seen the good in her. And it was a great courtship. Mm-hmm. And this courtship is just like, it's like silly drawing room, sitcom, and bad situations.
And I just was thinking, why choose this route instead of a battle? Because, you know, even Blake even says he's out of the running.
Right.
And then he's going away for 6 months to a year or whatever. And so we don't even that's kind of like nothing.
Okay, so I don't know that we need to go into predictions, but no. do you have a sense of where this is going?
No, well, let's talk about the rest of that at the end. So anyway, so let's move on from Mary to Edith.
Because poor Edith. Hashtag yeah. poor Edith.
Yeah, everybody's saying
that. I read a couple of articles online, yeah. just kind of catching up on the news, right. and, you know, they start with, poor Edith.
Yeah. Man. you can't avoid it now.
No, because Okay. So we open up the episode with, where's Edith? Violet.
Well Rosamund
coming into town, meeting Violet. Yeah. Should we tell Cora? Should we tell Robert?
Exactly. That was great. We have to tell Cora because she's a mother and she has a right to know.
Yes.
Well, should we tell about Greta? No, he's a man. Men have no rights.
They have no rights.
What?
Check.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about that.
You don't need to say anything because you have no right to say anything.
That's right.
John.
I don't have a right to say anything except congratulations. It's a funny line. And I loved it.
Yeah.
All right. So,
yeah.
All right. Before they get a chance to tell Cora anything, you know, off screen, Marjorie Drew decides to visit and
yes.
tells Cora everything.
Yes.
And of course, she's. What's the good term? Apoplectic. She's really pissed. She's highly indignant.
Yeah, highly indignant. Cora's pissed is what I wrote.
There you go, pissed. Mm-hmm. Highly indignant.
But pissed in the American way, not in the British way.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
I know what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's why he said indignant.
Indignant,
so
highly indignant.
So she admonishes Rosamund and Violet to find out what they knew and what you tell me and all that kind of stuff, so we get all that information out.
Right.
And what she knows. And I imagine she did feel completely betrayed. Obviously she did, because later on she tells, when the Violet says, look, I'm not going to sleep at all, you can trust me, and Cora says,
how can you think I will ever trust you again?
Exactly. And then Rosamund says she doesn't mean it.
On the contrary, it's the most honest thing she's ever said to me.
And you go, whoa, there you go, nice. So, and I think this is one of those things that Cora probably will hang on to for, I don't know. I mean, she for a long time. I'm assuming she'll eventually drop it, but this is something that is going to stick with her for a long time.
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the first consideration is that Rosamund and Violet were trying to protect the family, and I do get that, but we're talking about her daughter
and her granddaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And to think that you shouldn't include her with, but you know, there's always, well, I gave my word that I wouldn't say anything. So,
right.
But they always break their word on stuff when it's really important. So it's just so surprising that they didn't bring Cora in on this.
Yeah.
But then on the same thing, she says, you should have told me, but we won't tell Robert.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Because we have a code.
How does that work? Is it really because men have no rights?
Do you need to grab the book, the code book, the ladies' code book?
Yeah, I don't understand. Okay, it's okay. You won't. But she does, you know, Cora says, we need to find Edith and find out what she wants.
Right.
So, but still, why is it not okay for, why is it horrible for them not to tell you? Meaning, why is it not right for Violet and Rosamund to not tell Cora? But
right.
It's okay for Cora not to include Lord Grantham. It's just like, what? It's his daughter. It's his granddaughter. How do you make that argument?
Because he's more concerned about his dog.
Oh, well, okay. Good point. Touché.
I don't know. But you know, I think we just have to consider the time. That's all. You know, it was that there was a lot more secrecy in certain situations at the time.
I do love how Violet and had said the reason why they kept it a secret is because they were just trying to contain it. They just wanted to contain it. And, you know, of course, the scandal and everything like that, which does make a lot of sense for them. And also, Cora felt the same way, because when she goes to find Edith in London and Edith doesn't want to talk to her, she goes, okay, well, then we'll just talk it out right here.
Yeah, right here in front of your employees. Give them plenty to talk about.
So she knows the same thing.
Yeah.
She's clearly.
So we have that moment where they do go to the publishing office.
Well, wait a minute. I think it's great that Atticus is the one that comes up with it. He's going, wait, have you checked at her work? Didn't she inherit this giant business? Yeah, truth be told, nobody else said anything about that. Only because I didn't think that's where she'd go.
No.
I thought for sure she'd just sell it or whatever, just you to handle it and I'll go away.
Right.
But no, obviously, to her credit, she goes in there to do right by the publishing firm or whatever it is. And I go, wow, nice. But I just love that Atticus is the one, because they've been saying for weeks, the family's been doing it for weeks, just, you know, disregarding Edith and not caring and not really paying attention to her.
Well, no, yeah, except that she's only been gone for a day.
No, I know, last episode and this episode. But those weeks prior, they have no interest in her, what she's doing. They know she's off. I guess she's visiting. They don't really care. So
it's true.
It's that, and they don't even remember that she inherited the publish, because if they had taken a second to remember that, they might have come up with the same conclusion, because Atticus even says it's pretty obvious.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. That's the point. It's like, God, he's right. And because he's an outsider and he doesn't have any of that history, he makes the completely obvious assumption.
Because where the rest of the world would say, poor, poor Edith, it's just Edith.
So there she is at the publishing house. Okay, and they take her out to tea, and then Edith is coming,
hatching a plan.
Yeah,
right?
A day or two now, she's decided. What she's going to immigrate to America? She's going to declare herself a widow, raise a child.
Right.
Good plan. No, because Cora has a better plan.
And
I'm just going, okay. And then I hear the plan. The plan is, of course, to come back to Downton Abbey. And I thought for sure when Edith said, no, absolutely not, I thought it was because she'd realize maybe this is not the best environment to raise my child in because of what I've been through. But no, apparently not, I guess.
No.
Cora's idea, bring her back and you have the Drews tell them that they can't manage the children,
right?
And since Edith has taken such a liking to her, she'll bring him into the Downton nursery. Yeah,
which I said was one of the scenarios.
That's right. That was Jess again.
Thank you very much,
Tam. She hit that on the head. You absolutely
the
said
Drews.
That.
We can't afford this extra child. Can you please take her?
Is that what you said?
Something like that. I mean, yeah, it was about them not being able to afford to raise this extra child.
And of course, that gets dispelled because Mary says, just throw money at them. And then, of course, Cora comes to the rescue by saying, well, it's not really about the money. It's about she can't handle it.
Right.
You know. And then Rose has the audacity to say, well, that sounds kind of flaky.
That sounds ridiculous.
Like,
really?
You would understand how, what it's
like.
What
you would know. Yeah. Right.
Well, with help, it's easy.
Hence these children.
Yeah,
look at what a handful they are as they run in for the 10 minutes while we hang out with them before dinner.
And even Tom points to that. Oh, and then everybody goes,
you're right. They are a handful. Yeah.
So do you think it's a good plan?
Okay, well, I think we need to talk about what happens next in the plan. So they get Marigold. They go on the train. So it's Cora.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Cora, Edith, and Marigold get on the train.
Right.
They arrive at the station and they see Mary on the platform. Holy heck.
And Anna. Yeah.
And Anna. Mm. Holy heck, we can't get off the train with this child because we've got her with her. So they get Mr. Drew to come on, take off the bags. Edith and Cora get off the train. Mr. Drew continues on because the deal is he's going to go to the next station and then come back again. Mm-hmm. They will come back to collect Marigold after Mary's long gone and, you know, all will be well. Except Anna sees that there is a child in with Mr. Drew.
Right.
Okay. So there's that.
Yeah, but I don't know why they just didn't do this. You know, they're...
Because it's a sitcom, John. That's
I know. Why doesn't Corey just come off the platform and Edith with her? They go talk to Anna and Mary.
Yeah.
And while they're talking to him,
Drew gets off and goes the other direction.
What's the big deal?
Because it's a sitcom, John.
Okay,
and
right.
There has to be some crazy shenanigans that happen and... You know, oh God, masks and coats. I don't know. Okay, but so did you feel the sense of dread with Marigold being out of Edith's grasp?
Yeah, yeah.
Because everything is implausible on the show at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and they bring her right back into the Drew house where Mrs. Drew is. Really upset.
Beside herself with, I don't want to let this
so
child
so
go.
So that she's gone up to the Downton Abbey.
To
Downton Abbey.
Right. But we don't have to dwell a lot on this because it will be all figured out by next episode in theory. But, you know, Mrs. Drew was ready to flee with all of her kids and, you know, with no notice. Mm-hmm. Mr. Drew told Edith that was what it was going to happen. So do you think that could be what's going to happen next?
Well, at this point, sure. Why not?
I know,
it makes just as much sense as anything else. I think it's ridiculous to, if it did happen, I would throw the implausibility flag like crazy because I just don't think that Tim Drew would do that. because he knows the plan and he agreed to the plan. And I don't think that would be fair to anybody. It wouldn't be fair to his wife now that she knows who that child is.
Right.
And how could you
keep the child kidnapping? From her mother?
How could you abet kidnapping?
Right.
I just don't see him doing that.
Right.
He doesn't seem to have, he has much more integrity than that. So, but I can see her being distraught enough, meaning Marjorie.
Right.
To take the child for a bit and then think about it and bring it back. But I just have a hard time believing. But I did sense that. When they were thinking that they were going to put Marigold back with the Druze, I went, are you nuts?
Right.
Are you nuts?
Yeah.
Yeah, just didn't, you know, give her right back, put her right back in Mrs. Drew's hands when she's already so upset about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And who knows what she'll do?
Upset to the point where she told
yes,
Cora.
Exactly. Yeah, I just didn't make it say, yeah, you, this is not a good plan.
Right. But I mean, I cannot imagine that Mrs. Drew is going to be so heartless that she will want to keep the child who she's had for a couple of years from her birth mother.
Yeah, now that she knows. And remember what she said to
Marigold
when
she left.
Leaving. This is your mother. She, you know, we could love her more. All that kind of stuff. So I just don't see that happening, although I did think it did raise some flags when they
be ready
the
to
plan.
Throw your implausibility flag next week. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. But let's go back to the whole Mary thing, because you just said that, you know, Edith being gone and Mary saying that at dinner.
Oh,
saying
my
who cares,
God.
But I love the Violet's line, you know, Violet's line about,
right.
You know, my dear, what was it? Lack of compassion is just as vulgar as too many tears.
Too many tears. Something and excessive that, tears. Yeah.
Excessive tears. And I go, that's the kind of thing that I wanted the Dowager to say to or to stand up for Isabel.
During the dinner.
Exactly. It's like, well, where's that? You know?
Yeah.
But
my dear, a lack of compassion can be as vulgar as an excess of tears.
So anyway, so clearly, Mary just gives it no credence, and who cares about from Mary's point of view, who cares about Edith? Oh, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Cause she
just Edith.
Course, and it's because she doesn't know anything. But still, I don't know how much she would care anyway. And it's true. Lord Grantham kind of cares more about Isis.
I know.
I mean, that's what it, you know, maybe not when he, I'm sure when it.
Of course, yeah, if but he had it, to choose.
But on the day-to-day stuff, he's like, yeah, I hope she doesn't bore them. I hope she doesn't become too much of a nuisance.
Yes.
And all. It's like, that's how he sees Edith.
Yeah.
And rightly so, he's upset about Isis. I mean, who wouldn't be? And I was like, why is it? I don't want to see this.
No.
I don't want to see a dog die on Downton Abbey.
No. I mean, but are we going to talk about that at this moment?
Go,
okay,
yeah,
so
sure.
Isis has cancer, which is terribly sad. And, right, a Mary thing, oh, Papa, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry about your dog dying. Don't really care about my sister's engaged husband.
I don't remember
betrothed.
Her saying anything about how sorry she was about the Gregson thing.
No.
I mean, maybe she did. I just don't recall it. But that's how kind of pathetic it is. I don't remember having any kind of, you know, sympathy.
Care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, but I understand. I mean, she should have it with the dog, and rightly so. I'm just saying, where was that?
Well, and Isis has been more of her life than Gregson ever has been.
Well,
but not Edith.
Yeah, I know.
So, but anyway, so the final scene about with Lord Grantham and Cora and him, you know, I'm
Isis.
Not cross with you, but I want to be with her because I don't think Isis the dog, I don't think she's going to make it through the night. She knows that she will have someone who loves her on either side of her.
Yeah.
Between that and Isabel's look, I was like gone for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It was too sad.
It was too sad for you?
Yes.
All right. All right, well, then let's move off that and let's go on to the next scene.
Off of it. It was too sad.
All right. Well, I don't know if this is much happier, but let's go on to Anna Bates because, you know, we've been talking about this from talking about drawing something out. This thing, this is now two series worth with this last season, this season. And we're still trying to figure out the final disposition of the whole green scenario.
Okay. So Baxter, let's see.
She
okay,
overhears
so
Mrs. Hughes and Anna
talking about the ticket.
No, Mrs. Hughes talking to Mary.
Mary about
the ticket.
Right.
And Mary, of course, says she burned it. So Baxter overhears all that. She tries to tell Bates.
Anna
she,
and Bates, yeah.
Yeah, that, look, I saw the ticket. I know it wasn't torn. I'm willing to talk and say that. And, of course, Bates has no interest in that. He's just pissed off because she talked to the cops at all. It's like, what was she going to do? Not say, you know, but, you know, that's his position. So it's warranted to some degree. But he's just not interested in listening. And it's funny that Mosley comes to their defense and Barrow kind of comes to their defense and stuff like that. So that was interesting there too. And even Barrow's saying, look, just tell him. He'll understand. They all know, you know, if anybody would understand, it would be Bates. I had to say something because I've been to prison. They're holding that over me. I had to say something. I didn't give them anything that's going to hurt you. So,
you know, I'm kind of on, well, I am on Mosley's side about this, where the idea that she stole for, and we've been talking about this for weeks, not exactly a noble cause, mm-hmm. but she didn't do it for her personal gain. Right. She did it, you know, what I did for love, well, what I did for love.
But I'm going to argue that it is a personal gain because she just wanted to make sure that she
held
kept
on to that,
that relationship because she was desperate for it.
Okay.
Sorry, did I blow that out of your water?
Well, the idea that, you know, she... I mean, I don't know. I guess it's the idea that she's reformed, that Cora knows.
Yeah, everybody knows. It's out in the open now. So, I mean, she doesn't have anything to worry. But again,
I will say, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the idea of doing it for love is more noble than doing it for money in, okay. you know, in some sort of weird, sure. you know, emotional judiciary that we've got. Mm-hmm. So, so that's my argument for that.
Right.
And that, you know, she didn't go run off and, I don't know, tour Greece with it or right. something like that, you know.
But, and again, to Baxter's defense credit. As well, and to her credit, thank you, she's saying to Mosley, look, I'm not going to tell...
Defend myself.
I'm not going to tell Bates because he has enough trouble, and it's what good is it going to do anyway?
Yeah.
But, and he has enough trouble other than...
And she's right.
Minds. She is.
She's right.
She is right. And speaking of which, we'll real quickly gloss over this because... The Anna and Bates start talking about, because they think ostensibly that the whole green thing is handled, that they don't think that he has anything to do
it's
with going to London.
Like
and stuff
at the
like
end of the horror
exactly.
movie.
So they start planning their future.
When the beautiful music starts to play.
Let's sell the house in London, buy a house here, we can let it out.
And then at the last minute.
But wait a minute, it's not just that.
The murderer comes in with a knife and kills goodness. Them both.
But everybody's talking about it. Everybody's
no,
so
I
Patmore's
know.
Got a house. Hughes and Carson have got a house.
Now Anna and Bates.
It's like Oprah. You get a house.
You get a house.
So it's, everybody's going to be living out there by the near Downton renting out places.
Right.
So,
right.
And you know, that's what I thought was interesting because they were kind of setting this up. And I think he's setting this up for not next week, but for next season about what's going to happen. You know,
yeah.
Daisy, you know, she doesn't want to study anymore, but okay, she gets the, you know, because Barrow is the one that comes up with the idea to talk to Mr. Mason.
Right.
Mr. Mason sends the invite. They go there. He convinces her, no, you got to keep studying. You can do so much with your life, all that kind of stuff. So she decides she's going to. Next week, she starts talking about she's going to London to get a job. So I think all this is just for setting up next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? This is, you know, we discussed this a little bit off camera, but, you know, the idea that, well, it hasn't been stated yet that this is the penultimate season, but
right.
everyone is, we've been kind of assuming as we were going into mm-hmm. it, and not only you and
that
I.
We will have another season. That's all we know.
Do we know that? Has
I
it been renewed?
I think so.
Okay. Let's just say it has, okay. because otherwise we would have known that this was the last season. But then even on the message boards, people are saying, I feel like this is the last season. And not just our message boards. I'm reading them on all kinds of places. And so, but I think the reason why we all feel that way is because it feels like the second to last season. It feels like he's just marking time. And I'm sorry. I mean, it's rude of me to say it. So,
you're talking about Julian.
I am talking about Julian Fellows.
I mean, his storyline.
And I just feel like, you know.
He's drawing them out too much for you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this idea that the. We cared so much
right.
about Anna and Bates and Green last mm-hmm. season. We were up in arms about it. It was an incredible storyline.
Right.
People, I mean, it made the news aside mm-hmm. from, you know, talking about the show and entertainment. It made the news and we were incredibly passionate about it. And, you know, I tried to get the hashtag to trend, you know, unfortunate hunting accident, and we cared. And now we're nearly to the end of this series. And
we have green fatigue.
We're sick of talking about Green, and he's dead, and so what? Let's just move on. Let's find something interesting to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's terrible.
It is. Well, I don't know what he was playing or thinking or trying to create, but it seems like he kind of spent all his capital on the Green thing last year to drag it out to a season's worth, I think was... It's too much to overcome. I think we just don't care.
I don't care anymore. Yeah. I just care that he's dead. And, you know, the idea that in the coming ups, we see Anna and Bates both in the the jail. Right. They're not in jail, but there are bars and they are sitting there.
Yeah.
So we know we're not going to go spend another season with the people in prison because it was so boring the season that happened with Bates. But I just, you know, it's either a bad sitcom storyline or...
Well, and to continue with that thought, the idea that, you know, for instance, last series ended with not only was it Let Battle Commence, but it had Mary going into that...
The boardroom or whatever?
Basically a boardroom with all these men, and it looked like, oh, wow, Mary, this is the world she's going into. She's stepping in as more of a corporate entity, that's not the right term, but you know, more into the business realm than she was playing the lady, and none of that this season. I was like, why?
Oh, she did point out to the expense of plans. Yeah, I know, on the, like, the
again, why set that up if you're not going to use it? Because it could have been a very interesting storyline as well to see her to have to you know,
breaking barriers, exactly,
absolutely, and have people. You know, yes, she's a lady, but they're going to treat her like a businesswoman and they're not going to, you know, who cares who she is?
And it would give her the opportunity to play the kind of things that Violet does, where Violet, you know, stone-faced, you know, so much is going on back here. And then when she does speak, it speaks volumes. Yeah. And Mary is her grandchild and she's got those genes and that kind of mind. And we could have seen so much amazing stuff coming. My other criticism about it is that so much stuff is happening off screen.
Yeah.
You know, it's the
green murder for one.
Exactly. It's the cardinal rule in screenwriting. Show me, don't tell me. And all we've been doing is going, well, that happened last week. Uh-huh. And I thought I told you the other day that this happened. Uh-huh. And didn't I tell you that that wasn't mine? It was Mary's. Oh, you did tell me that. Instead, instead of actually seeing it happen. Uh-huh. And so we're all disconnected and we just don't care as much as we did before.
Mm-hmm. So. Where does that leave us? Well, I mean, obviously, there's lots to care about, but I understand and I agree with you because you know I've been the one saying that a couple of times this particular.
I know that's series. Where I got it.
Or kicking the can down the road rather than actually letting those stories be much more compelling because I feel like he's holding the good stuff for later, and this is, you know, it's like we're only getting little bits of it and not enough of it.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like we're marking time at this point.
Well, speaking of marking time, we're running out, so I need you to get some news.
Okay, great. Let's do some news and gossip. Ready? Here we go.
AfterBuzz TV News.
I'm starting with a sort of sad story. Last month, Downton Abbey's David Robb, who plays Dr. Clarkson, spoke at a charity service of dedication at Norwich Cathedral. The service commemorated the 25th anniversary of BEAT, a charity committed to beating eating disorders. It was held on October 22nd. The event was initiated to remember those lost to eating disorders and to, quote, honor their lives and memories with a simple, non-denominational service of remembrance and respect. During the service, Rob gave a reading to honor the loss of his wife, Bryony McRoberts, to an eating disorder in 2013. 300 people attended the service where candles were lit for those lost and personal stories were told. And a spokesman for BEAT said, eating disorders claim more lives than any other mental illness, and 1 in 5 of the most seriously affected will die prematurely. BEAT provides helplines, online support, and a network of UK-wide self-help groups to help adults and young people in the UK beat their eating disorders. There's some beautiful video out there of him talking about his wife, and it's, you know, it's just very sad and makes you once again love Dr. Clarkson.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really good to see that things are happening out in the world to help people with that.
Challenge.
That challenge. Thank you. Downton Abbey is up in the ratings a little bit.
Oh, nice.
This week's show attracted an average audience of 8.34 million, up from 7.83 million from the previous week, which is good, according to ratings count. Consultancy Attentional. And the more notable item about this is that Downton beat The X Factor in UK last week.
There you go.
Which is the first time that's happened in this series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that it beat The X Factor.
Okay,
so that's good news. Downton Abbey is taking over the Disney Channel.
What?
Well, Doc McStuffins, at least. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Joanne Froggatt, who plays Anna Bates, Leslie Nichol, who plays Patmore, Matt Milne, who played Alfred Nugent, Nigel Harmon, who played Mr. Green, and Robert Bathurst, who played Sir Anthony Strahlin are all lending their voices to Disney Junior's animated series, Doc McStuffins. Their episode titled Let the Nightingale Sing will premiere on Sunday, November 2nd in the U.S., and it will air in December in the U.K. In the episode, Doc and the toys magically travel back to 19th century England, where they meet a young Florence Nightingale, played by Joanna Froggatt.
There you go. So,
and help her realize her her dream of becoming a nurse.
So Downton Abbeyites.
Yeah, I mean, like a whole slew of them.
Yeah.
Thank yous and shout outs to Regina Montanola, Aaron Griffin, Lori Guthrie, Gemma Thomas, and Miss Raimi 100. Oh, and the story I talked about how Atticus Aldridge got his name. I tweeted that out and tagged Matt Barber, who plays him. And he favorited my tweet.
Look at that. Way to go, Matt. Nice. Good deal. All right.
That's what we have for news.
All right. Last words. Week. Anything. What are you hoping for next week?
Well, okay. So we see a wedding cake. There's going to be a wedding.
Yeah.
Mommy's going to be annoyed. Rose's mommy.
Yeah.
She's
going to annoy everybody.
Anna and Bates are wearing awfully fancy clothes in the pictures that they've released for next week's episode. So they're coming straight from the wedding.
They were going to the wedding or it was...
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Anna's in a lineup. Mm-hmm. I think it's all going to be silly and ridiculous.
Not all of it.
Just
enough.
I really hope the green thing is resolved by now because I'd like to see the Christmas special be Isabel's wedding.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I just want things
to move. Dr. Clarkson.
Well, what? What? No.
I don't know.
I somehow would love to see Larry and Tim get their comeuppance.
Ah, that would be so good.
It would be nice. I don't know how or if, but that would be it'd be wonderful to experience.
It would be.
Yeah. And I want the green thing, obviously, I want to resolve. Mostly because I want to get back to the really compelling storylines that we've had in the past, the ones that don't take a whole 16 episodes to
finish. Yeah, they do on American TV with 16 episodes. For goodness sake, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, two series with it. Yeah. So anyway,
I love the moments where we get to really see some character development and we were talking about at dinner. There are so many moments that we cared about in past series, and there really hasn't been one this series.
Not in this season.
And unless you count Atticus and Rose, but sure. I mean, really, come on.
All right. So anyway, let's tell them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Tamara Berg, TamaraBerg. Also, my website is TamaraCentral.com.
All right. And the only place you can find me is right here next week.
For the finale.
That's right.
Well, we'll bring wine.
The finale before the Christmas show.
Yeah. So, they call this the finale.
So they'll be here for
hopefully
the finale
we'll
next
all
week.
Be here.
And I hope you tune in. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks everybody.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later. Cup of tea.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.